Hey y'all, and welcome to Empowered AF with me, Joe Thomas. Today we have Mansi Moody with us, and she is an empowerment coach who is actually just right down the street from me. So I am so excited to have her on, and I am going to let her do an introduction because she is going to do it much better than I ever would. So welcome to the Empowered AF podcast. And please go ahead and give us a beautiful introduction and tell us all about who you are and what you do.
Thank you, Joe, for having me on your podcast. And it's so weird that I have a friend who lives just across the street from me, and I had no idea. And it's such a pleasant surprise when you find a woman who's like in complete alignment in thought process, in business-wise with you. I mean, how rare is that? But to give you a little bit of my background, like you said, my name's Mansi Modi. As you can tell from my accent, not American. I grew up in Botswana, was born in India, but what brought me here to America was actually higher education. I actually came here by myself at the age of 17 to do my bachelor's and my master's. That was in nutrition. So you can tell already that my path took a very, different turn in life. So I realized from a little bit of a storm that I hit at the age of 27 in my life, that I am actually a victim at that point of my conditioning. And I had hit such rock bottom that we will get into just now. And I realized that I was not in charge of my own life at that point. And it hit me so hard that it actually took me into 3 years of severe depression, where I'm not gonna sugarcoat it. I was almost suicidal. And because there was almost that storm awakened me to ask myself the hard questions, as in, who am I? What's my purpose? Do I even have one individual thought that is original and that is not influenced by my parents, my upbringing, my culture, the expectation of people around me? And I found that I had not one original thought. I didn't even know who I was as an individual. What is my personal likes and dislikes? What do I even stand for? What are my values that are not just automatically given to me through my culture? And I had to really deal with that. And I think on some level, we all are dealing with it, even though we are not in the eye of the storm. It's just, I know myself a little bit better. And when I realized that, and I was talking to more women, I reached out to women at that point in time, and I realized this story is not exclusive to me.
I would
And
agree.
this is not exclusive to a particular culture or a particular country. This is universal for so many women. Maybe America. You're talking about like a middle class suburban white mom to a, suburban in brown woman in India, in Mumbai. That story is true. Yes, obviously the degrees in which someone experiences these things is obviously differs, but it's a reality for so many women. And I was like, well, we need to talk about this. Why didn't anyone tell me about this? Why aren't we having more women being like grabbing you by the hand and being like, hey, do you know yourself? Do you know who you are? Aside from being defined by your relationships. And that's when I actually, because that storm created such an little thing in my own relationship with my husband and everything, we actually became relationship coaches together, where we are like, we are gonna coach Indian couples, like similar to our background, and coach them two on two and talk about the importance of healing yourself, healing your relationship, and standing in front of the world and saying, hey, come for us. You wanna come? Come. But we are together and we are building a life that is not determined by our parents, by our ancestors, by our cultural conditioning, by our upbringing, and by even our own childhood wounds.
I
But
would
when I,
be, oh, go
yeah,
ahead. I would just
go.
love to know what was your parents' reaction to that? Because knowing what I know about Indian culture, was there a lot of pushback from the people around you, or was there kind of a sigh of relief, maybe even from the women in your space, with you kind of stepping out and saying, because that's a really bold move in your culture to say, whoa, this is not okay.
Yeah. When it comes to empowering the woman, and then on top of that, empowering the couple, being the primary team A, is unheard of still in our Indian culture. And saying that, hey, everyone else, you all have boundaries, and we come first. The individual in the relationships come first. They're going to take care of themselves, and then they're going to take care of the marriage. So I always say there's three entities in a marriage. There's you as an individual, which is your relationship to yourself, then your husband or your spouse, whoever that may be, their relationships with themselves. And then there's the third entity, which is the relationship between you two. Right? And then we started talking about these things on Instagram. We started sharing our stories as to how and how what circumstances brought us to that point where we were like, no, this needs to change. And we got so many messages from Indian couples saying, why aren't you talking about this? Why aren't other people talking about this? We need to talk about it because I cannot tell you my mother-in-law did this, my father-in-law did this. I'm an educated, independent woman, but yet my life is really, really dictated by my cultural upbringing. So there was so much validation happening from our generation. But then at the same time, it upped, I'm sure, like the older generation in a way, because you are really questioning the dysfunctionality that has really been okay for all these generations. And you will be outcast, call the black sheep. And the price that we had to pay, because we learned how to set boundaries with our own families, we had to learn how to say no when they have, we know what is okay and what's not okay, and we had to set that. I can tell you, my husband and I have been outcast from his side of the family. We are the black sheep. And what's weird, again, because of our cultural conditioning, they will always easily blame the female in the scenario, the one who's from the outside. And that's true whether you're Indian or you are American, it doesn't change.
Yes, felt, very felt,
Yes, you are always the
relatable.
perpetrator. I know you relate to it because it's so bizarre, but because that person was not part of the family from the beginning, so she obviously has the problem.
It
Yeah.
must be her coming in and
In
changing him
changing
because
him.
he followed the rules before.
Yes, till now.
And
Till
so
now.
if she came in and she's getting him to go against this, it
Yes.
has to be her. It has to be
Absolutely.
her.
Absolutely. So it's always the outside person is the perpetrator. But you never stop to think, hey, what did we do to drive our child away from us? And weirdly, on the flip side, I will very proudly say my parents really looked at themselves and be like, whoa, we messed up.
Wow, that's huge.
It's huge. But let me tell you, Joe, I couldn't tell my parents what I really thought or what I discovered from my depression till 2022. And that too, I was forced to because I got this opportunity to speak on stage to 800 women. And I was going to lay it all out there. And I'm going to tell you the story. I'm going to start from this point where I think it'll give you a little more context why I had to have this conversation with my parents. So when I was born, I already had an older sister, and my mom went back to India to have me. They were already settled in Botswana. My mom went back because they weren't great healthcare facilities and all that sort of stuff. Now she goes back to India. My dad arrives the morning she goes into labor, and my grandmother takes her to the hospital. My dad doesn't come. He waits for the news if it was a boy or a girl. He finds out I'm a girl. He doesn't come visit me in the hospital, not really interested. And my birth was not celebrated. Why? Because I'm a girl. And weirdly enough, a child, no matter how young, can sense when they're unwanted.
Yeah, absolutely.
It leaves you a wound beyond measure. And you don't know why you're acting so wounded your whole life. You don't know why you're so triggered. You don't know all these things, but you can sense that something's amiss, right? And so things were said in subtle ways. Like my grandparents, when my parents took me back to their home, they weren't even there to see my face. Because they were not interested. Because if it was a boy, that's worth celebrating. Now, in Indian culture, why is boy so important? Because they believe that you give away your daughter when she gets married. Then she has literally no connection with the birth family after that. She's responsible for taking care of the husband's side of the family to kind of basically raise and have kids from that side of the family. Her entire responsibility is her husband's family, including his parents, taking care of them. She has no responsibility for her dad's side. Now, the son is supposed to take the family name forward, and he's supposed to be kind of like their crutch for their old age. That's the saying, and all that sort of stuff. Now, that's why I was not celebrated, because they celebrated my sister's birth because she was the first kid. That's fun. No matter what, it's one girl. It's okay. Second girl, oh my God, unacceptable. And so, what happened is that it left me with this wound of like, hey, I'm going to prove to you that I'm worth taking up space in this world. I had to prove, like from a very young age, I was very aware that I had to prove that I am worth even taking a breath in this world. That so every time my competition was, I will prove I will be better than that son you wanted. I'm going to prove to you that I'm worthy and beyond worthy of even taking up space in this world. So I did everything they said by the book. Be a good student, I was bringing A's. If they said that, oh, do not talk to boys because you will have an arranged marriage, you are going to do all these things, then I was like, I'm going to do that. And I did that, right? But one thing for sure, I'm so grateful that I always knew that choosing a life partner is probably the most serious thing I'll ever do. Who I choose to have kids with is going to be a very, very, very serious decision. And I somehow picked a spouse that my parents would tick off all their he's all the list. You know, my parents had this unlimited list of things. He needed to be Indian, but then he needed to be Gujarati. What is Gujarati? A person, we come from a particular state in India. He needs to be from there. So I was like, I tick that off because again, I'm that good girl, and I'm going to prove it to you that I do everything and just a little better than that boy you were looking for. So I'm going to do everything you expect a girl to do, but you know, one up, plus one all the time. And so I found that spouse, but also I found a spouse who understood what it meant to give respect, which is often missing in Indian communities, where the girl is just there to serve them and be subservient, to be there just to serve your existence. Whereas my husband was like, I see you as an equal. You are my person. I'm your person. Right. And I was like, this is the man for me because he fits all the criteria, but then some, you know? And I was like, he's the man for me. So I had told my parents at the age of 17, I found my man and he's the one. And they were okay with it because he fit all the criteria. So again, I did everything plus one. Then they said, you better get married by the age of 23. I got married by the age of 23, both my husband and I. Then they said, you better have kids as soon as possible and make sure hopefully you would be blessed with a boy. Right? I did that. And then my dad told me, like, oh, just get a bachelor's. That's good enough. Because if your husband needs you ever to work, you have some degree to fall back upon to work. And I was like, and then I'm going to do that, but I'm going to show you some more. So I did my bachelor's. I not only did my bachelor's, I graduated on top of my college, and then I got a full ride scholarship for my master's. And I did my master's. I did a public health nutrition. And then I was like, great. And then they were like, you better get a job, right? Because that's my in-laws wanted that expectation. They want you to earn the six figure because, you know, you're Indian, you're brown, you can either be a doctor or engineer. You better bring in that six figure income. So I was like, okay, I'll show you. I'll bring that six figure income. I'm going to raise my kids as if I don't have a job. And I'm going to be that daughter-in-law as if I don't even have my own family to take care of. And I'm going to show you that. And I did, and I did, and I did, and I did, only to realize I was never good enough for them.
Right.
You're never good enough for the people who never even wanted you in the first place.
Right.
How do you please people who were never pleased with your own birth?
Right. You were carrying a burden that was never yours to even carry.
Exactly. And so this is not a story just exclusive to me.
Yeah.
We all the women out there, I've seen so many from different backgrounds who are literally dying day after day, just trying to get that little glimmer of approval, that little glimmer of appreciation that, hey, you know what? You are doing great. Thank you. Thank you, mom, for like putting the food in my lunchbox. Thank you, honey, for like filling up the gas. Thank you for thinking of the million little, unthinkable things that I'm not even capable of thinking about, the invisible load carrying our family on your back day after day. And that's what I'm here to tell women, that stop seeking validation from people who don't even know how to give it to you. You have to figure that out within. And that's where your story is really going to start.
It's almost like this before and after, which is so interesting. I just asked this question yesterday in my group. Where was this like before and after part in your life? And I talk about this in my first book is like, there's this moment in your life where it's like, yes, you're born. But then it's almost like you're born again when you actually discover who are you and like why are you really here? Because you're not just here to serve your husband and your children. Even if your sole mission, some people want to be a mom and a wife. And that's okay. But what makes you that mom and that wife? There's still more to you than just that. What is that?
And even if you just want to be the mom and you just want to be the wife, and I think that's so beautiful, but I want you to really, really genuinely ask yourself, is it because I want it?
Or were you told, was someone else telling you this is your story and this is now your story you've taken on?
Absolutely. And I think most women don't know why they want something in their life. And I didn't know, Joe. I really didn't know. And there's still things about my life I don't really know why I do things I do. But I have the awareness now where I'm like, okay, let's take a breath for a second. Let me think. What am I doing here? Why am I doing it? And what that has done, though, Joe, for me was it has made me a very different parent, which I'm very, very grateful for. Because the way I am bringing up my children is not in the triggered parent form, it is not the result of my wounded childhood because I know my wounds so well. I'm not going to say that I've healed all my wounds. That's completely flawed. But what I know is that awareness brings a lot of self-awareness. Like it really brings a lot of consciousness into why you're doing certain things. And so I'm not just blindly like on autopilot just parenting my children. It's a very conscious effort. There's a guy called Sadhguru. He's a spiritual leader. I don't follow him closely, but there's one video that he has made on parenting that really hit me hard. And he said this one sentence, and he said, you know, raising, you're not raising children. They're raising themselves. But what you have to do is raise yourself in order to facilitate their journey.
I love that. So true.
And he said that if you do that well, this will be a 20-year project, like a very serious one. And he said, if you don't do it well, it's going to become a lifelong project. So he said, you're not raising a child, you're raising yourself. And that hit me really hard when I heard it, because again, I was in the you know, somehow the universe or God, whatever you believe in, sends you the tools. There he sends you or she sends you the signs, like, okay, this is what you need to listen to. You really want to heal yourself. It's those little snippets, you know, those little messages, the little, maybe the repeating numbers, whatever it is, it's out there for you to pick up and be like, the universe is going to help you heal if you're ready to heal.
And I think that part is key. If you're ready, you have to
And you
be.
will not be for a very long time. I'm going to tell you, those 3 years of depression, I think there were phases where the first year and a half, I was so lost. I was in complete despair, where I can tell you that I was not willing to even pick up a book, which is not like me. I was not willing to pick up a book. I was not willing to listen to anything positive. I was not, but that's okay. That's your phase. That's where you are. Feel your feelings. I wish someone, even someone would have stopped me at that point and told me, it's okay. Feel, like really feel, because you know you're grieving your previous identity. You are grieving the relationships that you thought were your backbone at one point. You're grieving everything you knew, which was your reality, but it wasn't.
And that is, I think people think of grief as only the physical life and death. But grief is so much deeper than that. Grief is a divorce. Grief is having to put up boundaries with people that were supposed to love you unconditionally, but you're like, that unconditional love actually does have conditions. And that's actually a hard thing to come to a conclusion. And even to this day, there are times, just I was driving the other day and I had this moment with my husband. I was like, I finally realized why I still have moments where I question your word. Even though my husband's not given me a reason to, I was like, wow, because someone in my life would say something and then later use it against me. And I had that moment where I was like, whoa, I finally realized this. And he's like, that makes so much sense to me. And I was like, me too. And it was this beautiful moment. Because we are
You're
so
beautiful.
self-aware, and just to finally be able to figure that out for myself,
That's the best kind. That's
it's
the best
so
kind.
amazing when we can have those moments, but it's also kind of like, whoa, you have to take that in for a minute because you're like, okay, that person is still around and they're probably still doing it, and you have to have those moments with yourself too. And it's, I think this kind of is interesting to maybe talk about for people. Of how do you, because you're talking about this with your husband. You guys had to kind of put those boundaries up and they lost that. How do people kind of navigate this? Because part of this is putting boundaries in place. And then you have the people who are people pleasers. How do you navigate being a people pleaser? And I think, especially as women, I think as women, a lot of women are conditioned to be people pleasers. We're conditioned to just go with the flow. And if you do tend to step out, now you are the scapegoat. You're the person to blame. How do you navigate that? What do you tell your clients? How do you help them work through that to put the boundaries in place and then be okay with sometimes the consequences of that?
I thank you. That question is so there's so many phases and there's so many ways of answering that question, but I think it's so important. Number one thing is I get very clear on what's okay and what's not okay. And why is it so? Why? The why behind it is so important is because, like, say for example, you have a relative who constantly, in a very passive aggressive way, keeps on subtly saying demeaning things to you. Right? And I know there's those people in each woman's life. And you, I mean, I know the women who are listening to this podcast, they have immediately a face that has popped in their head right now.
Yes, every single person, yes.
And you know her and you know that person and you know him and that face is in front of you. And then all of a sudden you're like, I really don't like that feeling, which I'm enduring, but I don't want to say something because you know what? I don't want to rock the boat. But they're not directly saying anything to me. They're not like being really mean, but it feels mean. And you know, those things get very confusing. It gets really muddled. And that's why I'm using this example because women are like, oh my God, like that's where we get really confused. It's like they're almost gaslighting us, but they aren't. You know, like I don't know what's happening here. And so for me, I'm like that feeling you're getting inside where it says, you know what, this doesn't feel good. This that gut feeling, I call it my spirit, guys. I call it whatever. I know everyone else is like, that's my gut feeling. That's like my intuition. Everyone has a different name for it. But that feeling is not okay. That feeling is your indication that, you know what, here is where we need some boundaries. And for people pleasers, and I'm going to say this very openly because I have done this. I didn't know initially the difference between a boundary and a fake wall.
Oh, yes. Preach it.
And the thing is, boundaries are done out of a place of immense compassion.
Yes.
Self-compassion first, and then compassion for, hey, I still want to maintain a relationship with this person because he or she is XYZ important to me or to our family or the integral system. Like, we're not trying to break up a family. Like, let's get very clear, right? We're not trying to distance ourselves. We're not trying to isolate ourselves. However, when you set up a healthy boundary, you're very clear on your head. A, what that will look like, that means this is not okay. This is okay. And you state it openly. Many a times people stay have boundaries, they have it in their head, but they don't state it. And all of a sudden you're expecting that person to know automatically or telepathically that you should know my boundaries. And then you serve the consequence to them as if, you know, on a silver platter, as if like you should have seen this coming. You
That
know?
even happens in marriages. I see that happen in marriages
We do that.
all
We
the
absolutely, we
Yes.
do that, right? So that's what I'm saying, that first clearly get very clear in your head what this boundary will look like. Does it come from a place of compassion? And also, does it make me feel, will, if this boundary is followed through with, will I feel respected?
Yes.
Right? So then you know you're, this is not a fake wall. And then you need to decide what the consequence of violating that boundary is. Because that's the other thing with people pleasers. All of a sudden they get empowered to set boundaries, but then they don't know how to enforce those boundaries and hold true to them. And that's where I think many women will benefit with a coach
Yes.
who can help them, like, and this is what it is, right? A coach is someone who helps you see your blind spots. That's what I see it as. And they will be like, let me hear your life story. Tell me what things you want to work on. I want to know your story. I really want to know where is it that I can objectively look at your life and be like, okay, let's figure this out here, you know? And then you can actually bounce it off someone who's like your inner circle and be like, hey, this is the boundary I'm thinking of setting, and this is going to be the consequence for it. And I want you to hold me accountable for following through when that boundary is violated.
Because
So
I
now
think that
together.
is where women, that is the number one thing. And whether it's someone in the family or even I see this in marriage and friendships, we
Yes.
throw out these kind of, I call them idle threats, where it's like, if you
Yes.
don't do this,
Yes.
I'm doing this. You know dang well you're not gonna do that. And even
Yeah.
with your children, if
Ultimatums.
y'all don't do this, then
Yeah.
I'm taking this away. They know you're not taking that game system away.
Yeah.
Stop saying you're going to do it if
And
you're
then
not
not
going to
closing.
follow through with it. You
Exactly.
have to be a woman of your word through and through and through and through, or
100%.
people are going to keep running all over you.
And again, you lose self-respect that way.
Yep.
When what you say is not in alignment with what you do. And also, you watch if your kid was looking at you and he or she was aware of what you said to a person, and then they see you not following through, you know your child is going to call you out on it.
Oh, for sure.
You know, especially we're bringing up empowered children, there you want them to call you out on the double standard. So the thing is that you wouldn't want them to do that. You wouldn't want your kid to be like, say something, do something else, you know, because you know that's the number one way to lose credibility, A, with yourself and then the rest of the people. So even if you ensure that the relationship is going, it keeps on going, you've lost respect entirely in that relationship. I think people who enforce good, healthy boundaries, actually, people respect them. They understand, wow, that took courage. They may not like it. And they're not going to come and tell you on your face that, hey, that was fabulous, by the way. They're going to absolutely tell you, like, hey, that was mean and how horrible of you. And, you know, you're just trying to break up the family and stuff like that. But I'm telling you, internally, they know how strong you are.
And they're
And
going to respect it, most
yeah,
likely.
and 100%, because they know that they are not able to do that in their life, too. Now, the other aspect is fake walls, you know, like where you are just completely just at that point where you're just cutting off people in your life, like just cut, 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 cut. I can't deal with the toxicity. I'm done. I'm done. I'm done. I'm done. What you're doing is actually self-isolating at that point. And you are actually getting bothered by being triggered by toxic people in your life. And I am guilty of doing that. I'm not, but that's when my realization came, hey, is this a fake wall or is this a boundary? When you start seeing yourself doing that, which I think is another phase of healing, when you are putting up fake walls, I think it's right at the precipice of learning to set a boundary. It's like that in between moment. You're putting up fake walls, you just haven't mastered going into setting a boundary. And you're putting up and you're self-isolating. I would be like, take a moment, take a breath, and ask yourself, why am I cutting out so many people in my life? You know, why? And it could be that you're justified, you're completely justified. But I really want you to take a moment because we're meant to do life with people. We're not supposed to be doing it in a cocoon.
Right. We
I want you
crave
to,
human interaction.
yeah, and you want a community. Obviously, if you go ask anyone who's walking down the street also, hey, would you rather be all by yourself or just like have at least someone you know you can call upon? And I'm pretty sure even the most introverted person would be like, hey, I need my person. I need a few, maybe one or two, you know, but that's enough. But I need them in my life. And I think that's important. You know, as women, we get to that point where like I'm doing for everybody. And then they get to a point where they're like, I'm done asking for help. I'm done doing for others. Then they get to the point of self-isolation. And I'm like, no, we don't want to go the other way. We want to go to a more towards the most highest version of ourselves. You see, there's a two-sided coin, or even I would call it actually a double-edged sword. When you hit a storm in your life, you can go the other way, which is the lowest vibration of yourself, which is like staying in that depression. You can stay in that triggered form. You can become resentful. You can become revengeful. You can become those things. And it's okay to feel that. But then the other side is the highest version of yourself. And that can only happen when you are at that lowest vibration of yourself. But I think we need to find a way to get to that highest version of ourselves. The most empowered version of ourselves exists in some parallel universe. So if it's in some parallel universe, you can bring it into this reality today.
Yes.
And that's what I think is a woman's true power, is choosing despite the pain, in spite of all the stuff people have done on your life, and it's justified. You should feel mad, you should feel anger, but to channelize it to help you propel you forward, that's important.
And what would you, I know it's a deep layered question, but for this small portion, because this is very deep, what would you say to those women who are feeling those emotions? You know, they grew up feeling unwanted, unaccepted. They're in that stage of, okay, you spoke about this. That name popped up. I want to build that confidence. I want to start healing these wounds. I want to be able to speak up. What are some steps they can start working on to kind of get to that point, to kind of maybe move even just from a little bit of that low vibration to start working up to that higher level?
That's such a good question. And when you were asking me that question, the first thing that popped in my mind, again, this is not a science, right? And you took me back to that moment where I really was hurting
Yeah.
and I was in a lot of pain when my entire world had turned upside down from what I knew it to be, you know? And I'm like, And I was at that moment, I was transported to the little bench in high school where I sat by myself. And I was sitting by myself, and I can still see that little 14-year-old girl sitting by herself and doing everything right. Doing everything right. I didn't date boys because that was not culturally acceptable. And I was that good girl. I didn't interact actually even with boys because if I interacted with a boy or even just said hello or I was exchanging notes with the kid or whatever it is, there would be some Indian kid who would go home to tell his Indian mom and then she will gossip that, oh, that means she's dating him. And my parents would get hurt, and it would bring gr disgrace to my family. I'm not kidding you. This was my thought process because I was like, I am not going to bring shame to my family. I'm responsible. They were putting so much burden. All this burden is on the girl. All of a
Yeah.
sudden, she's not worthy of your time, love, and affection. But you know what? She's responsible for the entire dignity of the family.
Right.
And so, when I look at that 14-year-old girl doing everything right, but never getting any validation, I, as a parent, looked at her and my eyes welled up. And I was like, I just wanted to go hug her and say, you are doing everything in your power to out of love. Love for your parents. Love for your culture and everything. You're doing everything right, but do something for yourself. And I'm so proud of you. I am just so proud of you. And I want you to live for yourself just for a moment. Just for a moment, just live for yourself. And I would give her a big hug. I'll sit with her the whole recess because she's sitting by herself. That's so she won't feel lonely. And then smile, depart, give her biggest hug, and be like, you have no idea how much courage you have, and you will thrive through it all. That moment, I did that meditation over and over and over again.
Yeah.
And there was so much healing power in that moment for me. Take yourself to that lowest point where you feel you are left alone and go be your best friend. Go be the adult you needed at that time. If your mom didn't show up for you, go be the mom you needed at that time. If your dad wasn't there, go be the dad you needed at that time. Because now you are the person who can change your story. So go change it from there. Change it from that moment. Because your stories go so powerful. Your love for yourself should be that powerful that those who messed up or who didn't show up, you can make up for it. You can't change them, but you can change you. That is your superpower, to heal yourself all the way back then. Reparent yourself. Be your own best parent. And then I'm not looking for someone out there to be my mom. I'm not opening myself up to these vulnerable situations because I'm looking for this validation. I need some savior to come. I
Who's
am.
never going to come?
He's never. So I think that's that smallest point. Take yourself and just have a conversation.
Oh my gosh, I could like talk for hours. I'm so excited you're like just down the street. Oh
Excited
my gosh. I
too.
feel like everyone listening right now, I know, is going to just be like, oh my gosh, like I already know I have people in my like circle that I'm going to send this to, so they are going to be seriously, they're going to be messaging me like, "Whoa, bring her back on," because that was I'm so glad we connected. I'm
I'm delighted.
so glad we connected, and I'm thankful you shared your story because I know what people don't always understand when I bring people on the podcast is even when we've healed, when we come on and we relive our story over and over and over, that we are opening up wounds over and over and over. And sometimes we have days where it's okay. And sometimes we have those moments or someone asks us a certain question where it's like, oh, wow, the way you asked it kind of takes us back to that moment. So I just want to thank you for being so vulnerable and open and sharing this because I know what you shared is going to touch many women today. And so I am so appreciative of that. I want to know first and foremost how people can follow you before we close with anything else, just so they can follow you. I think you have a YouTube channel. I know you have a podcast too. So how can they keep listening to you and all the goodness you're out here sharing?
So the primary way of contacting me or staying in touch with me and all my content is actually through Instagram. You can find me at Manasi Modi. I'm saying it the way it's spelled, which is Manasi Modi, Mody. That's on Instagram, one word. And that's the number one way. I'm actually in the process of starting up a podcast. You won't believe I actually had taken a little sabbatical off of coaching and speaking for about a year, just to settle down my kids in this new place, new environment, because again, that was a very conscious choice on my part. And so I'm starting it back up. I want to get to know the entrepreneurs, the women in this area, and just I love speaking on stages. It's my passion. I just love it, you know, where there's crowd, like a room full of women, 700, 800, maybe 10 women. I just want to fill their cup because no one actually ever goes and fills the empowered women in their life. And so that's what I want to do, is to be of service of women. And talking is one of the way I do it. So that's the number one way I want to like serve communities is talking. And so if you want, follow me on Instagram. You can always find me on Facebook. That's my first name and last name. And that's it.
Awesome. We will definitely link all that in the show notes too, so people can easily jump right onto your Instagram and follow you. And so I would love for you just to leave us with any last thoughts before we depart today, just speaking to the women who are kind of in that space, you know, what last thing can you kind of leave them with as we kind of leave today for those who are in that space where they know that maybe they're even realizing for the first time today that they have allowed someone else to share their story. Because I have a feeling there are going to be a lot of women today who realize for the first time that I've spent a vast majority of my life letting someone else tell my story. And now I'm ready to start writing my story. What will you say to those women?
Well, it's a new dawn. It's a new dawn, and welcome to your new life. In a life that is going to look so vastly, so beautifully different than you ever imagined it. Not because your relationships are going to change overnight, not because your situation or your financial situation is going to change overnight, because for the first time, it is you in the driver's seat. Making your own decisions without being clouded by other people's thought process, other people's opinions of how much you should shrink yourself to fit into a mold. You are vast, you're abundant, and you don't need to fit into a mold to be, pleasable to other people, to be acceptable by other people. You are so enough. Whether you want to take up the whole sky or you want to stay at home and be just so present with your family, it doesn't matter because the decision is yours. You are not meant to fit into someone else's mold. All you're supposed to do is be happy in where you are and how you can serve those around you with. Without compromising who you authentically are. So, welcome to the new dawn and to the new you, the authentic you.
I love that. And with that, guys, thank you so much for listening today. And in case no one has told you today, you are beautiful and you are loved. Empowered voices truly do make a difference. And make sure yours is being heard.